Okay, so I think growing up, because I was always confused, am I Bosnian? I come home, I eat my Bosnian food, I speak only Bosnian to my parents, I attend Bosnian events and cultural activities, but then I go to school and I have barely an accent, and everyone calls me Elvira instead of Elvira, which I completely encouraged at that time, and because I wanted to fit in, and this is who I was. This was my community outside my home. So I think as I grew older, I began to identify with my religion more than my culture, because that wasn't as confusing. I know 100% what faith I am. I'm Muslim, and to me that was not an issue, whereas maybe the other aspect of where are you from, who are you, was just too much to try and figure out at an early stage. And so I grew up identifying as Muslim.
Growing up here, everybody has, you know, every family, all these suburban families and whatnot, they have their churches. That's usually the community, where the community programs are and everything. Well, Indians typically have one temple per city, so every single Indian person is a part of that. Well, I wasn't, because I wasn't religious. I knew very early on that religion was not for me, so I assimilated much more into American culture.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm Perrine.
And I'm Skye.
And something that is a huge, huge part of my identity is my faith. It's my religion. It's what gives me comfort. It's what gives me strength. It's what pushes me every day, every night.
Yeah, and I think in our current political climate and some of the things that's been happening, it's been on the top of mind for a lot of Americans as far as the religion of folks who are immigrating into this country and our first generation of folks in this country as well. I know as a first gen, one of the privileges that I hold is growing up as Christian in America. My parents are Episcopalian. My grandfather was an Episcopal priest, just a long line that I come from of Christian folks.
And that's 100% true, because being of Christian faith is something that we would look and see this country as the majority. You know, that is the predominant faith within America. And that's kind of how it's been for centuries. And so though we have within, you know, our laws, the separation between church and state, somehow there's still ways and reasons where that blurs and where we kind of allow for that to trickle in. And again, like, my Christian faith is so important for me. Growing up, my father was Methodist. My mother was Baptist. And we grew up starting out in a Methodist, predominantly Black church. And we were there, you know, for a few years. And when we moved to a new neighborhood, we ended up going to a Southern Baptist church. So I didn't just say Baptist. Wow. I said Southern Baptist.
That is quite the difference.
So it was very, you know, like 100% conservative, and it being a Southern Baptist church, it was predominantly white. It was actually 99.9% white. That 1.1% was our family. And not only were we Black, but we were African, we're Liberian. And so we stuck out like a sore thumb. We were just very, when we walked in every morning, every Sunday, it was almost sometimes like you felt like people were trying to be like overly compensating or overly nice and whatnot. Like in Sunday school, like, are you okay? Like, how is everything? Like, and I'm like, I'm good. Like, you know, I went to school where I was constantly the minority. So going to church for me and being the minority still was something that was the norm, you know, and so it wasn't something that necessarily made me feel uncomfortable. I was just kind of, you know, in that situation. It's just kind of, you know, how it was. But it was definitely something that I noticed, you know, every Sunday, like going to church, we're literally that African family. And so my father was very, very big on his faith. He actually received his divinity license from Duke University, and he made a whole gospel album with the musical saw, like literally the saw that you cut wood with.
It's kind of dope, actually.
And a mallet. Our family photo is like one of the album covers. Like, shout out to the baby version of me. But
so shout out to yourself.
Yeah, like I'm on the cover. Like I have
just say
like,
shout out to me.
A record like cover. Like
you are not Blue Ivy, girl. Calm down.
But I could be. So it's really cool. It's really awesome. And my faith stems from my parents instilling my faith into me. And when I say that, we literally, my father made my siblings and I. Every single summer, we went on vacation Bible school tours. When I say vacation Bible school tours, we know when we get out of school, from the beginning of summer to the end of summer, every week, my father had different churches across Greensboro, North Carolina, mapped out and had us registered. We went from week to week to church to church. We went on a Christian tour of Greensboro at every single vacation Bible school that we could get into. And it was so interesting because it allowed us to be exposed to different denominations at a very early age. Because we went to Baptist, we went to Methodist, we went to non-denominational, like all these different churches around Greensboro. It really instilled in me, like, you know, how I identify and like who I am as a Liberian American Christian woman today. And I found my church home here in Charlotte with Elevation. And that's what was so important to me. Different races, different creeds, different ages, all coming and worshiping the Lord. And I think it's one of the most beautiful things about an American church is that it can be so open and welcoming.
When you're talking about your experience growing up, so I had a similar experience growing up of being the Wilsons. We were basically the only black family in our church. There was an older black couple that also went to our church, but we were the only black complete family there. And it was a relatively small church, Episcopalian. And growing up, like going to Sunday school, it was so, looking back to me, it just seemed so bizarre, but at the time it was normal. Our Sunday school teacher was this Jewish man because his wife was a member of the church. And so he came to church with her. And during the sermon, he would be downstairs with us doing Sunday school and she'd be up receiving her message. And, you know, the day before they were at synagogue together. And so they kind of did that for each other. Like they both observed one another's faiths with them. So just wow. In Sunday school, we learned a lot about the Old Testament. So,
That's awesome.
It made sense, at the time. And like, it never seemed contradictory in my mind growing up, like why we were making dreidels at church and talking about like Passover and things like that. And the Episcopalian church has just a history of being more liberal than other churches and being more accepting. And so I think that from a young age, I was always in an environment that seemed to be supportive of folks. And so I just think back to those memories and the Sundays that we would go to church and some of the Sundays that we didn't. Growing up, my grandfather lived with us until he passed, and he was a minister, a preacher. And so the Sundays we didn't go to church, I remember getting the little knock, 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 knock on my door, and it's my grandfather waking us up, like me and my brothers pulling us into the living room, and he had like the Book of Common Prayer, yeah. And he would like open it up and do like a little like service with us and for us and to us as we were like sitting there in our pajamas with like, you know, like dried spit on our faces from drooling in our sleep and things like that. Religion was a really big thing growing up in my household, though we didn't go to church every Sunday. Sorry for revealing that, Mom. It was something that was ever present. My mom would have my brothers and I come into my parents' room every single night before she went to bed. And she would read a part of the Bible to us, and then we would all get down on our knees and pray every single night before we went to bed, and then she would go to sleep and we could go back downstairs and watch TV or do whatever we were doing. But like, we always had that moment during the day where we would pray together and read the Bible together.
It is what you make it. It is what you experience, you know, like with your family. And there's no right way or wrong way to practice your religion, at least to me. Sky kind of tapped on this earlier, and it's something that is very huge and something that is kind of under attack in this country. And that is, I think, the freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. And Sky and I are both, like we said, privileged enough to consider ourselves Christian Americans. But for those who are not Christian American, they have an entirely different story, an entirely different experience. And that's something that we found that's so important to share. And it's something that's very vital so that we can understand one another better and that we can learn from one another and kind of get the real story and the real experience from someone that's walked it and lived it.
Exactly. When the executive order on immigration came down, I know it was one of the first things that Perrine and I talked about was making sure that we were able to elevate the voice of, you know, Muslim Americans and folks who are Muslim and first gen as well. And so we wanted to make sure that, you know, we're really able to allow a space for folks to be able to talk about their experiences and to really humanize folks as well.
Like, our faith is important to us. It is also important to others. This is Rufai's story.
I identify myself as Nigerian American. A lot of people, you know, say, well, you're just African American, because that kind of is included. A Nigerian American is included in African American, but I didn't really grow up in a typical African American household. It was a Nigerian household, but socially at school, it was an American kind of socialization. Having Nigerian parents or any parents from, you know, overseas or not American, they definitely have a different sense of what success is and how to achieve it. And I feel like that was instilled in us from a very early age. I grew up having to read encyclopedias over the summer and do book reports on the encyclopedias. So world books, A through Z, I've read them all. My parents tried to instill to us to be as American as possible because they didn't want us to stand out. They kind of wanted us to speak properly and do things the American way, because they knew the opportunities that came with it. And they knew that if we stood out, that we might not be afforded those opportunities. But at the same time, there was a large Nigerian population in Greensboro where I grew up, and there was meetings monthly. They were called Zamunta meetings, and it allowed us to kind of meet other Nigerians and socialize. And those are the people that I call my cousins, my aunts and uncles today, because all of my aunts and uncles are still over in Nigeria. And those are the people I grew up with. I think they balanced teaching us about their culture as well as allowing us to be American was difficult for them, because they wanted to instill their values, which honestly is a completely different from the core values of typical American households. Out of race, religion, and culture, I would say race is what I identify with the most, because it's the first thing that, you know, everyone else sees. And in today's current states, with race relations, I think that being Black or being not white, really, is the first thing that people notice and has been utilized as a tool to kind of separate us. So when people see me, they're not going to see that I'm African until they see my name. And then they'll probably say, okay, he's African. But I identify mostly as Black. I came home from school. I had just got a new starter jacket, you know, that was in at the time. I had on the toboggan, the skull cap or whatever. And my dad comes up to me and is like, Rufai, you are so Black. And I'm saying, Dad, yes, I am black. What do you mean by that? And he's like, we are Hausa. You look black. And I was confused. I was like, but we are, everyone's black. Africans are black. But I guess that was me assimilating in his mind to the African-American culture. And growing up in the outskirts of Greensboro, in an area where Ku Klux Klan meetings were held right down the road, trying to get jobs around that area for high school, people would turn my, like, I'd seen people throw away my application right when I handed it to them. It was difficult, but it was also right after 9/11, so I kind of understood the emotions, but I didn't feel like I should be punished for the actions of a few extremists. If anybody asked me, I wasn't Muslim. I wasn't Christian, I wasn't Muslim, I was just here, you know? But it wasn't until I got to high school, I got more confident in myself and who I was and learned more about the different religions that I could, you know, fully say, yes, I'm Muslim. That's why I'm fasting at lunch. It's Ramadan. So my parents taught me about faith pretty early. We started Islamic school when I was 10, but my parents also had friends that were Igbo and Yoruba who weren't Muslim. And when we spent time with their families, they showed us the Bible. They took us to church. So I was kind of inbred in both religions. And definitely my parents obviously wanted us to stick to Islam. And I kind of did have that ability to choose which route I wanted to go with. And personally, I did choose Islam, but we did have that ability to learn both religions and kind of make that decision for ourselves. Choosing to be Muslim definitely affected my relationships with others. There were times when I was dating people and they didn't want to be with me because I was a Muslim, or, you know, people's parents didn't really want them to associate with me because of me being Muslim. Even jobs that I've had managers that would only give me certain abilities on the job because of my religious beliefs. It affected me pretty negatively, honestly, when I first started experiencing it, because it felt like the world was against me. It felt like, especially after 9/11, that was the toughest time of my life, was dealing with the hate just because I was Muslim. 2002, we were going to the mosque and I had on jalabiya, which is traditional garb. You know, my sister's hijab, my mother's hijab, and a guy in a truck pulls up to us and is cussing us out. And I mean, that was almost every day. That wasn't anything that was out of the ordinary at that time. But it was really difficult to kind of stick to your beliefs when everybody is saying you believe the wrong thing. I had guys in high school who, his father was a pastor, and he told me that I was going to hell, straight up. And I don't know how I didn't fight him in the cafeteria that day, but I just looked at him and I said, if that's really how you feel, then maybe you should think about what you believe. It wasn't an easy time, but I made it. And having lived through it today, it kind of helps me want to make sure that everyone's educated on what my religion is truly about and kind of end those myths. When I first started college, my roommate, I would pray 5 times a day. And it was new to him. He'd never seen me do it, or anyone for that matter. And I guess because I was able to join the MSA on campus, it kind of allowed me to be more open with my religion and assimilate in that sense of just being a resource to teach others about the religion instead of hiding behind the walls of the myths. The biggest misconception of Islam is that we hate all other religions, I think. That's what it boils down to, that Muslims hate Christians and want to abolish them. I've heard that ratted to me before, actually. Oh, you only bathe once a week. Somebody told me that Muslims always smell bad and they only bathe once a week on Fridays, which is our day of it's similar to our day of Sabbath, which just simply is ridiculous. Islam is peace. At the main root of it is peace. It's not a religion that's based on hate. The Quran and the Bible have many similarities. And people that think we don't believe in Jesus, we do believe in Jesus. same God that Christians worship, Jews worship, we worship as well. I feel that people just are fueled by the extreme actions that we've seen on the news, and because they come out of the Arabian Peninsula, they try to tie it all to Islam. People always jump to conclusions. The media can sometimes help people jump to conclusions. But if you do your research and talk to people and really understand what the religion is about, you know that it's no different from what you believe, to be honest. There are differences, but at the core root, we're all here believing in the same God. I think a lot of hate verbiage is being used to try to bring hate to Muslims, but I'm very shocked by the response to the Muslim ban and the amount of people that stood up against it and spoke against it. It was really impressive to me, and it lets me know that the current state is still on the up and up for Muslims. People are respecting Muslims more now than they did in 9/11. And though we did have some hate crimes last year, the three Muslims at Carolina who were killed, the three Muslim brothers who were shot as well, execution styles, it's difficult, but at the same time, if you think about it in the big picture, I think that it is on the up and up. Whether it's Nigerian or it's black, we are the people who have been disenfranchised over the period of history. And the fact that we can still accomplish the things we have accomplished with so many setbacks, with slavery, with colonialism, like, it's amazing. And I love having those roots within me. It pushes me to never give up and never quit any task that I'm trying to accomplish.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It helps other people find us. We can also be found on SoundCloud and wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. That's #1, STGENS. Plus, get extra content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield. The show is co-hosted by Perrine and Sky Wilson. Trey Pierce, a.k.a. Self, is our audio engineer. Special thanks to our roundtable guests, Betty, Elvira, Chelsea, and Sean. And a huge thank you to Rufai for sharing his First Gen experience. Music from this podcast is listed by name and artist within credits and is derived from bensound.com and SoundClick. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for taking a chance on us. Am I saying Charlotte? Did I say Charlotte? I said it right? Okay, I don't know why I feel like my...